Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Recording and listening back to the human voice is pretty much commonplace today, but it was a marvel in the first half of the 20th century. It was the first time you could hear people's voices without seeing them face to face. Many of those early recordings have been painstakingly preserved at Harvard University. Reporter Noam Osband checked out the collection and has this report.
Imagine a library for voices.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood.
A place where you can sit around and listen to records with friends.
Until everything was rainbow, 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 and I let the fish go.
And that was the Harvard Vocarium. The Vocarium was the brainchild of one person, Frederick Clifton Packard Jr. Born in Boston in 1899, he loved the spoken word.
Frederick Clifton Packard is my grandfather on my father's side.
That's Josie Packard. She was close with her grandparents.
It was not uncommon for one of them to break into a recitation, just sort of spontaneously after dinner. Maybe we're washing dishes. And I know how unusual that sounds for most people in their family culture, but for me, it was the most natural thing in the world.
Packard joined Harvard's faculty in 1920, and he later became the school's first professor of public speaking. Here's Mary Walker Graham, assistant curator of the university's Woodbury Poetry Room.
Once he was able to record the voice, there was no question that that's what he should do.
Packard used records for both research and teaching, and he created a makeshift recording studio in a school chapel. He recorded students when they started college and when they graduated to understand the roots of, quote, the Harvard accent. He also taught a popular public speaking course, one where the students had to make recordings. Students, like a young future president.
My name is John F. Kennedy. I'm going to speak this morning.
He had a vision to create a library of voices, comparable to a library of books.
But Packard had more than just scholarly motivations. He joined Harvard's faculty at a time of rising worldwide fascism and totalitarian leaders who were known for their effective oratory. Packard thought public speaking education was vital for defending democracy and that listening to recordings of excellent literature was an important part of that training. In 1933, he started the Harvard Vocarium record label. It focused on poetry.
At the time, recording was very new. Very few entities had the equipment to make recordings, and the recordings that were being made were not of poetry.
Packard tried recording all the poets he could, and since it was Harvard, a lot of them were coming through. He recorded so many of the major poets of the mid-20th century. Authors like Marianne Moore.
Known to the red bird, the red-coated musketeer, the trumpet flower, the cavalier.
W.H. Auden.
I suppose you could call Harvard the Oxford of America.
And T.S. Eliot.
Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table.
It is, as far as we know, the earliest recording of T.S. Eliot.
Eliot was the first person recorded for the Vocarium. The poet's 1933 guest lecture series at the school was seen by people at the time as significant as Harvard's first real recognition of the importance of modern poetry. There was some diversity, but the label's output reflects the tastes of mid-20th century academia.
His decisions about who to contact were generated by interest, and I think that his interest was in white guys. Sorry, Gramps.
Packard advertised the collection to home audiences in magazines and newspapers, and the Vocarium eventually released more than 500 titles. But he recorded more than just poetry readings. Here's Josie Packard.
Capture, 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 capture. He just really wanted to get as much down as he could.
Packard recorded marching bands, radio broadcasts, sermons, languages, accents. He even recorded the surgery of a rat. Eventually, the Vocarium became a space. When Harvard's Lamont Library opened in 1949, Packard worked with a Finnish architect to design an area dedicated to poetry and the Vocarium's collection. Mary Walker Graham explains.
There were communal listening stations with a central record player. Up to 8 people could sit around one record player and listen to a recording together.
Thousands of students were visiting the Vocarium each semester. Packard hoped that one day Vocariums would open across the country, but that didn't happen. In 1955, Harvard withdrew support for the record label. Not long after, Packard developed the first symptoms of the Alzheimer's that would eventually take his life. He retired from the university in 1965. The listening room survived, but fewer students came to visit.
And after he retired, his entire department was carved out.
But his work lives on. In 2003, the Library of Congress added the Vocarium record label to its collections. And over the past decade, Harvard has begun digitizing and putting highlights online. Now people all around the world can enjoy the power of the spoken word that Packard held so dear. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Noam Osman.
Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.